On today's College Football Inquirer, Ross Dellinger was at the White House for the summit between college sports leaders and the President of the United States, where, no current student athletes were invited. Also, Ohio State's president resigns. Now, this is a guy who was very involved in college sports, who said the quiet part out loud a couple times in the past year. What does that mean? And what does it mean when a president who is involved in sports steps aside and a big, giant university that is very powerful is now looking for a new president? Plus, Stephen Godfrey is fascinated by the conference realignment nastiness going on in the state of Louisiana. We'll talk about a team that may be on two conferences' schedules, all today on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Stephen Godfrey and Ross Dellinger. I am Andy Staples. Ross has traded his beanie for a newsboy cap, which means he's going to the halls of power in Washington, D.C.,
Order of the Peaky Blinders.
I thought I would wear the hat that I wore to the White House, and that I'll probably we'll wear to the Capitol today.
Tell Tommy Shelby hello.
I will do that.
He's in Birmingham.
Big day on the Capitol. I don't know if it could be described as a big day, but there's another round table, not as distinguished as the round table, with participants as distinguished as the round table that we saw in the White House on Friday, but another round table, this one in the Senate, about college athlete, specifically employment. So let's start with, I guess, Friday.
Yeah, let's start with you at the White House on Friday. Donald Trump gathered luminaries from all over college sports, no current athletes, of course, and talked about how he would like to push everything back to pre-NIL. And I believe he said the salaries for players keep increasing, that universities will stop universitying.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
Ross, was it an $18 million quarterback? Were you able to confirm which quarterback has been paid
$18 million? You would need a billion-dollar quarterback to make the University of Michigan stop University of Michiganing, but
just want to make sure that the leader of the free world was correct in all the things that he said. Did we find out the $18 million quarterback?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal for a number of reasons. Not the least of which was the leader of the free world not knowing about how sort of we got here with the court case that Greg Sankey had to fill him in on during the actual proceeding.
That was my favorite. He didn't even know the Alston ruling existed. Yes.
And then somebody, I don't know who it was, somebody after Sankey told him it was 9-0, Supreme Court ruled 9-0 in Alston, somebody yelled out, "And Kavanaugh voted against it too." Mr. President.
Brett Kavanaugh, for those who don't follow your SCOTUS updates, Brett Kavanaugh is a Donald Trump appointee to the Supreme Court, who is probably the most conservative of the justices, who came out the hardest against the NCAA because he's an actual conservative.
Turns out being a small government federalist has absolutely nothing to do with this presidential administration. But I digress. Ross, continue. I'm still loading all my guns.
I think you guys might know this more than me. Trump has appointed 3 or maybe 4 Supreme Court justices. I can't remember, but either way, it's at least multiple. His reaction to being told by Greg Sankey that the Supreme Court, that the Alston ruling case was appealed and the Supreme Court ruled 9-0, his reaction was, "Oh, the Supreme Court did this? Gee, what a surprise." Despite him appointing, I think, at least 3 of the judges on the Supreme Court. So the whole thing was surreal and crazy. That there were 50 people on the panel. There were more than 50 people in the room, obviously. Even if you discount media, there were probably like 65 or 70 people in the room because there were chairs set up in the back behind the round table too. Say the number 60. I think we heard from maybe 15 people actually spoke. So that was interesting. I mean, no university president actually spoke. No TV, but
they don't have
ESPN or Fox spoke. The three of the four conference commissioner, power conference commissioners spoke, but Tony Petitti did not. So a lot of people did not get a voice because either there weren't time to get a voice in, or they chose not to. So that was interesting. Smart. But the we're 3 or 4 days, people are listening to this, and it's a little 3 or 4 days old now. So I'll spin it forward a little bit on.
I have a question. Of course, and I saw Paul Feinbaum ask Greg Sankey this yesterday on his show, and Sankey dodged effectively. I'm not going to let you dodge effectively, Ross. Donald Trump mentioned that he was going to draft an executive order that would, I believe the quote is, solve every conceivable problem.
I'm excited.
When's that happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. When I heard that, which happened about 10 minutes left or so, mm-hmm. The first, like, there was it was 100 minutes long, was the, basically right at 100 minutes was the event.
Length of any good rom-com.
Yeah. I would say that the first half was pretty cordial in a way. You know, they just kind of went around the room. Everybody sort of, you know, they spoke about the SCORE Act and all that stuff. And then the back half, you could tell that the president began to get fairly frustrated at the fact that the judicial system, as he said, was to blame for this. And then he obviously has a vendetta sort of against the judicial system because of rulings that judges have recently made going against him and his policies. And so he certainly let that known. And then there was a space of time where several politicians in the room, most notably Ted Cruz, told the president that it's going to be very difficult to get legislation through Congress. And that is at the point where he sort of just, like, I guess, threw up his hands in a way. He may have done it physically, actually, and said, you know what? I'm just going to do an executive order.
That'll fix it, Don.
Made me ask the question I did, which was, how will this executive order be different from the last one that you released just 7 months ago, 8 months ago, in July?
It'll be better, Ross.
More comprehensive was his... was his answer, and then he proceeded to ridicule the judges for another few minutes after that.
Did anybody tell him about the states that made the NIL laws that weren't judges?
There was a little bit of mention of that, but okay. Don't worry about it.
Let me ask a question. What is the news here? What was
the about
purpose?
To get to spin it because, forward.
Yeah,
of what
I don't understand.
Or generate.
I know there's a Senate. I know the Senate is going to meet, but what you were there on Friday. Every national outlet was there. What was the point? You were the reporter there.
This is perfect.
What was the point?
This is perfect. This is perfect because by the time this posts, I'll have a story explaining sort of what the point was and where we go from here. It was very clear because of a number of factors, including the invitee list and the fact that it was streamed live for the whole time and the fact that the press was in there the whole time. That the goal of this was to bring attention to the topic, along with maybe other things, but certainly college sports, and by way of doing that, get Congress moving on legislation.
I feel like that's a little oversimplified, Ross. I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
Since nothing was accomplished and there was no declaration of intent to actually create any meaningful change, because I think even the average American knows now that an executive order would just simply get tied up, right? It's not actually going to implement change.
Well, he even said that.
You're right.
He said that an executive order will be sued.
I think we need to do our due diligence here as media communicators in the Fourth Estate and explain why this actually took place and when it did, and against the landscape that it did in Washington. There are other major distractions going on now for this president. He's not doing great by any objective measure, and we can just throw it to the polling. We don't have to be political. We have multiple world wars going on. The price of gas has increased. We have a tremendous alienation of this administration from everybody in the moderate side, with the exception of his hardcore base. So he rallied college sports as a thing that he thinks will play to a broad audience. And the timing of this is part of the news. The timing of this is a reason.
Well, it's also a miscalculation because the broad audience, there was a way to tap into that broad audience a couple of years ago. which is bash the NCAA. That was,
yes.
You could get bipartisan support for that. But there's really not bipartisan support anymore for either side of this.
But Andy, his positioning, the president of the United States, he's so ill-informed and he was grasping so badly as a reality TV star would to try and platform some other issue to distract from what's going on, that he actually assumed the position that the public was against. The overwhelming majority of college sports fans have been against the NCAA for years.
Yeah.
And he actually assumed the position that was defeated emphatically. Do you know how hard it is to achieve a unanimous decision in the Supreme Court? But he didn't even know that, right? He had no idea.
Not as hard as you think, but it was emphatic. And his own appointee was the one, yes, who's like, you know, you eight were kind of gentle. I'm going to bring out the knives. Like, that's...
But the other political strategy that is just a total failure here is that, again, because POTUS has no actual knowledge of this subject and he's playing almost at sort of like a base level to what he thinks is his audience, core parts of his constituency, core parts of the 2024 electorate that brought him into office would be against any intervention. One of the major faults and fallacies here is that conservative Republicans would somehow be in support of this. Because conservative Republicans are the one fueling NIL at places like Texas Tech, places like Ole Miss, places like Miami. Programs that went to the college football playoff this year that would not normally go so far, and we can say, well, that's because of the new era of NIL. Those people vote red. But because he's so uninformed and because he's grasping at something purely for a PR platform, he completely misread the actual issue in the room and just used it for a media event, which he succeeded because we all ran around and talked about college sports. And I'll get into Ross.
I enjoyed my Friday.
I want to ask about this term crisis in a minute, but I have a lot of questions there. So Ross, you said that this actually resulted in something, which I'm still dubious of what this actually achieved other than a momentary distraction from a poorly received world war. Is there something else?
Well, that was certainly, yes, that was certainly, whether that was the intent or not.
He was asked about the American involvement in bombing of Iran in the middle of this college sports commission.
He was. It was the first question to him, and he diverted and probably made the questioner feel bad. And then the questioner, I think, asked a college sports question. But then it got back to the war somehow. I don't even know how we got back to the war. And then he actually discussed the war. He did discuss the war briefly. Look, you know, was this some kind of distraction from meant to be a distraction from the war? It seems like most people would agree that it was.
What's interesting to me is, you know, I mentioned Greg Sankey going on Paul Feinbaum yesterday. Mm-hmm. And he was doing damage control. Like,
yes,
he spent
this
significant time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He spent significant time in that interview saying, hey, by the way, things aren't as bad as it was made to sound. And then went on to say that the SEC has added women's sports, has added scholarships in women's and men's sports since all this stuff happened, because Greg Sankey's not stupid. Like, he understands that the opponents of what Donald Trump would like to see are going to respond with the facts, which is,
right,
they're not acting broke. They're acting like they've got a lot of money.
And even during the event, Jim Phillips, ACC commissioner, right after Trump had for like the 10th time talked about the elimination of women's sports and the reduction and defunding of women's sports, Jim Phillips said, well, actually, right, we added 900 scholarships in the ACC, a majority of those to women's sports. And then literally the next thing out, I think, of the president's mouth was, again, the destruction of women's sports.
Yes.
So basically,
you just bulldoze past any fact that you don't agree with. Right, and then we're supposed to objectively respond to this and say, okay, well, the highest office in the land says there's a crisis in sports. And now Greg Sankey's on Feinbaum on Monday saying there's a
crisis.
Basically
saying there's no crisis, which, by the way, does not help Greg Sankey get what he wants, which is the SCORE Act pass.
But I'm looking at quotes from the transcript where Greg Sankey is now adopting this word crisis, Andy. So I don't know if we're going to do it now or in the next segment. I need someone to explain where the crisis is. I don't. I was unaware we were in a crisis.
That it's not the way it used to be, and they would like it to be the way it used to be. That's the crisis.
Okay,
apparently the president too.
Real fast though, let me ask a couple questions here. So normally, if a market is experiencing a crisis, such as I don't know, a worldwide dependence on foreign oil that causes a massive economic collapse every time there's a skirmish, okay. That's a crisis. The energy sector would undergo a crisis right now. We have a crisis in college sports, according to the leadership of the United States, and now according to the leadership of college football. Because Greg Sankey used that word yesterday on Feinbaum, which is a little bit like going on state media, so it definitely keeps with the theme. We have a crisis, okay? Mm-hmm. Can you show me where the crisis is in terms of revenue? Anybody? So that would be television revenue.
Too much revenue is going toward the players.
Okay,
that's the crisis.
But we are at record television revenue. We're at record gate revenue. We're at record licensing revenue.
But the guys who got to keep all the money before don't get to keep it all, Godfrey. Don't right. you understand?
And so the definition of a crisis would be, oh, you know what? You know what it is, guys? It's probably consumer apathy, right? So ratings are down. Are television ratings down?
No.
They're actually up, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay, wait. So inventory's down. We can't create more. Oh no, inventory's up. Huh. Okay, so consumer demand
buying their way into the FBS.
So we have consumer demand. Oh, so supply's up too, and revenue's up, and demand's up. Is that what you're telling me, Andy?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where is the crisis?
The guys who got to keep the money before don't get to keep it all now. That's
so
the crisis.
That's a crisis.
I keep trying to tell you.
along with
but that can't be right
player,
because the
player movement, all our players are moving around so frequently that to them that's a crisis.
The players are moving because the players want to move, not because the coaches.
Yes.
So Ross,
right?
So that probably has shown up though in people becoming apathetic about major brands. Mm. No. Okay,
not really.
So I'm struggling here because the leader of the free world and Greg Sankey are telling me there's a crisis. Could someone else explain?
But again, this is why Greg Sankey.
I'm an idiot. I got kicked out of
Ole
Miss.
Greg Sankey's on Feinbaum yesterday using the word crisis, but then explaining how there's not a crisis and explaining how things are actually great. And I guarantee you he's understanding that he's undermining his own argument, but he has no choice at this point.
And why is that?
Because the facts aren't on their side.
Because a highly unintelligent person with far more political clout than him spouted off at the mouth. He had to go for political reasons to represent his red base and then had to sit there while someone spouted a bunch of stuff that was completely factually inaccurate. And he had to smile and eat it with a spoon. That's why.
And then he clarified one of the comments. By the way, we lost in the Supreme Court 9-0.
Hey, guess what? You hang out with face-eating leopards, they're going to eat your face eventually, Greg.
Oh, Godfrey. Oh, my gosh.
All right.
Let's talk about the SCORE Act, Ross, because that is that was brought up.
Fun.
How Speaker Mike Johnson got up and
a lot of time talking about the SCORE Act and passing around, I guess, a fact sheet on the SCORE Act. So what we were talking about earlier, like Godfrey asked, like, what is going to happen from this? I think, you know, it did bring attention to it in a way that does it have people moving in Congress? I think we're going to see in the next few days or weeks. There is a roundtable today in the Senate about this issue, specifically athlete employment. The SCORE Act is probably going to get to the floor next week. But again,
you've told us that before, Ross.
They said that in September. They said that in December. So they said publicly right on the live stream, we have the votes now. The difference is they're referring to the votes to pass the bill, a bill vote. They weren't referring to the rule vote. And boy, it gets really confusing. But you have to do a rule vote first. That's always along party lines to get to the bill vote. And that's what they failed on because they didn't have all Republicans on board for the rule vote. If they have all Republicans on board, they'll pass the rule vote. And then when the bill vote gets there for the SCORE Act, not only will it pass, but as Steve Scalise said on Friday, they'll have several Democrats, but Democrats aren't going to vote for a rule vote. You know, they're going to only vote for the bill. So it gets a little confusing.
Not
so
help them out on the rule. Yeah.
Correct. They're not going to help out. You have to do the rule vote yourself.
Now,
like
there is the matter of the SCORE Act, as written, will not pass the Senate.
So,
right. Yep, let's so, get to again, that. Yeah, that's very, very
like, can you, right. Can you tell me what's different this time?
About what?
About any of this? Like well, we held this big thing. We had this big PR event that the president co-opted college football for, and it blew up our college football world. And you're telling me that this, what, if anything, did Friday affect going into this week?
Well, I think it got the SCORE Act to where it is, which is allegedly to the floor. Okay. I think it's going to put pressure on Ted Cruz to actually sit down with Maria Cantwell in the Senate to talk about a bill. I think that will happen in the next few weeks, if maybe not days. I think there's a lot of pressure on, and you know what it did? Third, it got Cantwell and Eric Schmidt, a Republican, to jointly announce a bipartisan bill that amends the Sports Broadcasting Act, which was intentionally dropped on the day of the roundtable, I'm sure, purposely. So I think there's some things that are moving in Congress, whether it's because of the roundtable or not. I guess I'm not, you know, you can't be sure, but it seemed like some of these things are because of the pressure on certain lawmakers from the White House slash college sports slash their own party. And so, you know, I mean, we've been doing, this has been 7 years of this. And I think I said in the spring on our old pod, this is the closest to like I ever thought they would be to a bill with the Cruz stuff and the SCORE Act. You know, we'll see if something materializes.
I think they
in
could
the
pass
Senate
something if
SCORE.
if they take the antitrust exemptions out. But that's the well, thing that, I really want.
Yeah. That, well, there's the three things, right? There's like three things that are separate. Because really, like, the issue here is between is in the Senate with Maria Cantwell and Ted Cruz. Though that's the like issue here. And I think there's three things they kind of disagree on. The breadth of the antitrust to the NCAA, like how deep it goes, how strong it is, how, you know, is it limited? Is it whatever? And then employment, the anti-employment clause, and then the Sports Broadcasting Act situation. So those are like three pretty big things that they've had disagreements on. But I think there's enough pressure now built, you know, toward Friday's roundtable and from Friday's roundtable to get those two maybe in a room. You know, Cruz was in the room at Friday's roundtable and was questioned about it, certainly. And so that's where this is. Like, the SCORE Act is sort of like, okay, if it makes progress and passes the House and gets to the Senate, they're going to still have to amend it and modify it. Cantwell and Cruz are. So they have to get together at some point.
They're not going to get what they want.
No.
If they get this bill through both houses of Congress, it will not give them what they want.
What I think, correct. And what I think Cody Campbell had a good line, actually, in Friday's roundtable. He said, if we want to get a bill passed, we're all going to have to be upset in some way. Right, it's not going to meet all of our needs. We're going to have
that
to
that might
upset
be the most honest
way.
Thing I've heard so far.
And then, he told Trump that he might have to, quote, twist some arms to get a bill through Congress. So there was that said as well. One thing before we move,
and then
off
he wrote
this
a check for a quarterback
topic. Yeah, I mean, is the break. Executive order? He wrote an executive order in July. We've seen no impacts from it. At all.
Oh. So again, no real point of any of this on Friday.
So no. Well, again, I think if by the end of March, Godfrey, there's no bill that passed the House, and if Cantwell and Cruz have not entered into negotiations, you will be right. I'm going to guess that one of those things, if not both of them, will have happened. But we'll see.
Andy, how are my odds?
I like your odds. Let's put it this way. If I were a betting man, you'd have a minus in front of your number. Right. Okay.
So wait, executive order. So to be clear, legal experts say, and I wrote this back in July when he passed the first one, our country is run on congressional action and court rulings, not executive orders. So
it's almost as if somebody wrote a document in the 1780s to divide the power in the federal government into three separate branches that all one of them couldn't bigfoot the other. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah, checks and balances, I believe, is what I learned when I was in like fourth grade, right?
Yeah, a little Schoolhouse Rock.
Little checks and balances.
The president did say multiple times in this thing that if this continues unabated, you know, paying players what they're worth, it is going to destroy the entire American university system.
Wow.
Which I thought was interesting since, let's say, I don't know, Ohio State, for example, their university's budget is like 30 times what their athletic department budget is. So as much as I love football and have spent my entire career covering it, if college football disappeared tomorrow, I don't think universities would stop universitying because there's way too much money in that. But that brings us to our next topic. Because we do get the intersection of the people who run universities and college sports and a very powerful person who runs a university is no longer employed by that university because, well, there was a pants issue.
Oh boy.
We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and let us now speak of Slapshot. Slapshot is the call sign of good Ted movie. Carter, who also a very good movie, but the call sign of Ted Carter when he was a pilot in the military. He then went on to a career in higher education after retiring from the military. He was the president of the University of Nebraska system for a while, and most recently the president of Ohio State. It came out Monday that he has resigned as Ohio State's president because of, I believe they termed it, an inappropriate relationship with someone trying to improve or get resources for their product, which we've now found out is a podcaster who has a podcast connecting veterans with jobs with the electric company, which is highly specific. But Ted Carter, no longer the president of Ohio State University, the Ohio State University, because of this. And Ross, I wanted to talk to you about this specifically. It is a huge higher education story, but it is also a big college football story because Ted Carter has been very active in college sports. Presidents kind of go one of two ways. They either don't want to touch sports, they don't care, or they're very active. Carter was always very active. He's recently said the quiet part out loud with regard to the Big Ten, which is something that fans ask us all the time. Like, why does Ohio State have to subsidize Purdue? And Ted Carter said the same thing on the record, which is a big, big deal. So this is a guy who was kind of leading things down a path, and now he's done. And what does that mean?
Yeah, he was kind of led the, probably like any Ohio State president often does, leads the sort of Big Ten room, Big Ten president's room. And obviously the Big Ten is a pretty powerful in wealthy conference. So that right there makes you, anybody in that seat, I think makes you pretty important at college athletics. But you're right, he was even more so into college athletics. He said a lot of things publicly. I
played hockey with him, right?
I believe that's right.
I think that's where the call sign comes from. So he played college
hockey.
Make
sense. Yeah, that would make sense. And, you know, was at Nebraska before. And then before that was at Navy. I believe he was Navy. I had met with him a couple times, and he was not shy about discussing, as you mentioned, the revenue distribution stuff. Discussing the future of college athletics, the model of college athletics. I mean, just recently, probably a month ago, maybe less, he did a television interview where he discussed issues in college athletics and sort of hinted to something drastically needs to change as far as, like, you know, people might have read into that as like, oh, collective bargaining, because that's kind of what he was getting at if you listen to the interview. It's an instrumental sort of figure in college athletics and in higher education now out. And that's the second one. Second straight Ohio State president lasted for you know, less than two and a half years before sort of an, you might say, off the field issue caused a resignation. And again, Ohio State for a while had the largest budget, athletic budget in the country. I think Texas and Texas A&M are now, they're kind of jockeying with Ohio State. It depends on the year. So that, it's just a massive athletic department, 36, I think, sports. And obviously a football program that, honestly, like if you're around that program, it acts as a pro sports program. You know, they don't have a pro sport in Columbus, pro football in Columbus.
They got an NHL team.
It acts as the pro sport in town. So very big deal indeed. And president searches take forever. So we won't have another one for at least like 8 months, maybe a year.
Yeah, I covered, actually when I was a beat writer covering University of Tennessee, covered a president who was taken down by the same
issue
thing that took Ted Carter down.
Sex, doing it.
I wasn't going to say it.
Philandering, carrying on.
Except, I think Ted, well, I don't know what Ted Carter did, but I do know that this particular president of Tennessee, I was at the SEC spring meetings in Destin, and he showed up with the woman who was not his wife at the thing.
Whoops.
The story this was like on Wednesday. The story broke Saturday, and it was all over after that.
Wow.
But it was it is amazing how it changes things, because like at University of Florida, Ben Sass was the president, the former Nebraska senator. He was the president a couple of years ago. He gets run out because there was a lot going on, and he fell out of favor with the people in charge. He was paying people to really not come to Gainesville and work that were kind of his political cronies. There were a lot of things going on, but his ouster when it happened, which was painted as a resignation, probably saved the athletic director, Scott Strickland, because Sass was one of those very heavily involved in athletics presidents. And it probably saved Scott Strickland and probably kept Billy Napier employed as the football coach for another year. And these things have huge overarching effects. And Ross, I think it's interesting because Ted Carter was the most outspoken in one of the two most powerful conferences.
Yeah, the Big Ten, certainly, like there's not anybody in the Big Ten, any president, I don't think, I'm going over in my head, in the Big Ten that was even close to as publicly outspoken about college athletics as he was. Yeah. And he was very involved in, remember the Big Ten PE stuff, the PE deal. They were very involved in that, and sort of on board mostly with that, not completely. But you know, he had a big role, and it's going to be interesting to see sort of who in that room, because Michigan has a brand new president, hasn't even started yet. So you think about the Big Ten room, you know, the president's room, which makes very big decisions, especially right now, like in this current climate and all the evolution going on. Who's going to take that role? That should be interesting. I think Penn State's president's like relatively new, maybe. So it's kind of fascinating. USC's president.
It's a good thing that the Big Ten doesn't have a huge outsized effect on what happens with everything else. It's not like they're trying to radically reinvent the postseason or anything.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the thing I'm curious is, you've got all these newbies, and so does that mean Tony Petitti has a chance to consolidate his agenda to focus things, or is it now another wild card he's got to work with that he's got to figure out?
Perception wise, he could probably do with a little bit of that consolidation of power. If those things matter to you, the perception of Petitti versus Sankey in a lot of these matters has been that Petitti doesn't seem like he commands his room quite the way Sankey represents the interests of his consortium. So if you're just looking from a political standpoint, this would be an opportunity for Petitti to do that. It's just weird because post Jim Delaney, the Big Ten hasn't really ever had that kind of like big looming figurehead, right? It's been like we don't have that one individual the way that they used to have.
Well,
we've seen Delaney.
We've seen fractures. So you know, Ted Carter had just started at Nebraska when Kevin Warren tried to cancel football, and Ted Carter, and who understood his constituency very well, was dead set against them canceling football. And so you saw that, and they weren't the only ones. Ohio State at the time was very against canceling the season. And then in this case, you had Michigan and USC rebelling against the equity deal, which, yeah, you don't normally see that in these big conferences where the fissure is publicly visible. They always argue behind the scenes and then come out and say, we voted unanimously to do this when we know you did.
It's almost like a conference that encompasses Rutgers, Nebraska, Southern Cal, Washington. They might have wildly differing, if not conflicting, priorities.
Mm-hmm. Shocking.
Crazy, right?
Shocking, right? Cultural and geographic differences come out in decisions. Yeah,
but that surprise. Can't be right. They're all legends and leaders in my book.
Yeah, one thing I will say about like the Big Ten presidents are not as involved in a lot of like the athletic decisions like the SEC presidents are. You know, I think they're just not quite as involved, which makes the Big Ten, I think, like of all the leagues, like more of an AD coach run league than presidents, where the SEC is probably pretty much heavier presidents, definitely.
Yeah. And that's why this was so involved. That's why this was so shocking, I think, and probably will make the biggest difference in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Because this was one of the presidents
who
was
right.
Very, and Ohio State has had those over the years. Gordon Gee was like that.
Yeah.
When he was the president of Ohio State.
You kind of expected to be that, right? When you're Ohio State's president. It's kind of like probably to a degree Texas's president. You know, you're expected to be involved, which again, you know, Texas's president, I don't think their new president has even done an interview yet. So again, that gives you that's just the difference between, you know.
Is that again, like I'm not trying to sort of go loop back, but is that because like Ohio State is also held or sort of commanded more of an outsized presence in everything to do with the Big Ten? Like, you know, Andy and I have talked before about the old like Roy Kramer, Mike Slive era of when it was a 12-team SEC, everybody sat at the table equally, whether that was true or not, like whether you were Alabama or South Carolina. Whereas like going back, and I've worked on a couple like history projects about the Big Ten, it's always been you have to appease Ohio State and then you have to appease Michigan and then it's everybody else. So it kind of feels like I'm not saying that position has been like a de facto pseudo commissioner, but like the way you guys bring it up and then looking through history, the president of Ohio State is one of those like larger than its title positions in college football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
More so than any other school I could think of.
And and they'll have to, you know, Ohio State's board is going to have to keep that in mind because they also need to be careful because what if the new Michigan president decides they want to be in charge?
And he is, right? He is very involved. Ken Severud, former a Syracuse president was,
involved in the ACC at Syracuse.
Yeah, very involved. And he was at the center of the College Sports Tomorrow sort of like Super League-ish proposal from the Lynn Perna group. Suvarud was one of the prominent voices there and has been public about it. In fact, I believe him and Gordon Gee, when Gordon Gee was at West Virginia, wrote an op-ed that basically said all the presidents needed, they were calling for all their university presidents around the country to get together and make sure to stop the Big Ten and SEC from forming some 30-team Super League. They wrote an op-ed on that. And now he's in the Big Ten.
Let's see how he feels about this Super League.
Yeah, he's in the Big Ten now. But either way, he's probably going to be a pretty big voice in college athletics, I would guess, in the league.
So Ohio State board, if you don't want the other side of the rivalry to take control of that room, You better ask a lot of sports questions in your interview process.
Yeah.
Let's move to something equally messy, but much more, I guess, like much closer to the field of play.
Yes.
Stephen Godfrey was agog last week at the news out of Louisiana involving Louisiana Tech, Conference USA, and the Sun Belt. It's a mess, guys, because there's a reason you haven't seen schedules yet. We'll explain when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and a story hit the news last week that Stephen Godfrey immediately forwarded into our group chat with some giggling emojis. Louisiana Tech has sued Conference USA because it is trying to get out of the league this year so it can play in the Sun Belt this year. Godfrey, are there schedules for Conference USA and the Sun Belt that both include Louisiana Tech at this very moment?
Yes, there are. He's
so excited.
Real fast. Let's shout out the Lincoln Parish Journal, because all good journalism starts locally.
Very good.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Shout out Lincoln
and
Parish.
And for you for putting it in a group chat to alert us all to.
Well,
to the
you know, if someone's paying attention to North Louisiana and it's not me on a national level, I'd like to figure out who it is. As we record this, it is Tuesday, March 10th, year of our Lord, 2026. The following conferences do not have schedules for this season. Right now, Conference USA, the Sun Belt, the MAC. I went and ranted on my other show, Phantom Island, phantomisland.show, because on Friday when I discovered this, the Mountain West did not have a conference schedule. In addition to that, schools in the Missouri Valley and FCS, gentlemen, were still trying to adjust their season schedules. Now, you're asking what's going on and why. So there's the aforementioned suit that's going on with the University of Louisiana system on behalf of Louisiana Tech, because I'm going to do this quickly. Conference USA is saying, hey, you're still a member here, guy, Louisiana Tech, and we put you in our 26th schedule for conference play. Their new conference, the Sun Belt, has said, oh, we thought you were showing up. We have you on our conference schedule for 2026 for conference football. That is one problem. It's a pretty significant problem, though. That's one problem. Yeah. The other is, as we've covered on the show, since Indiana hoisted the national championship, Sacramento State and North Dakota State have decided, yo, we're going to play in the FBS in 2026. The cascade effect of this, if like my guy Kevin over at fbschedules.com, I don't know if you guys ever use that website.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
a fine website,
time.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Those of us in the industry, we use it all the time. He's having a time of it, y'all. Let me tell you something. My guy, he's doing sad Eli Manning gifts on social media because, like, it is rough out there for a scheduler, my friends. So, Sac State leaving and North Dakota State leaving have created a cascade effect, because down in the humble, forgotten FCS guys, they've solved 90% of the problems that we talk about when it comes to the postseason. They have a nice, clean bracket. The word bowl is not involved. They're played on home campuses until the final championship game. But guys, they do this crazy thing, which is they have scheduling intent where they try and schedule really good out-of-conference opponents, win or lose, because the committee that selects the FCS bracket rewards that. I'll pause and repeat that for people in Dallas to maybe listen to. So the removal, as one might assume, of North Dakota State, a gazillion-time national champion, has created a hole in a lot of schedules for people who are trying to compete for FCS national titles. So you've had a scramble to replace that. I'm going to not, like, drag the show down, but if you want to have a laugh, check out the schedules of, like, Sacramento State and North Dakota State now, and the teams that they've had to fill in. So the MAC, which Sacramento State is a member of the MAC, right, which is in the Midwest, okay, and North Dakota State and in Northern Illinois are in the Mountain West, okay, which is a West Coast conference. You still with me, guys? My favorite so far, all right, is that Sacramento State, MAC member Sacramento State, is going to play a game against Hawaii, a member of
the Mountain West.
There we go. Okay. You got to check these days because you don't know if it's the Pac-12. The weekend of Thanksgiving. So the MAC doesn't have a game. The MAC has no schedule yet. And what do we know about MAC games in November, guys? When are they normally played?
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Correct. So they now
is
have
Sacramento State going to have to play twice in a week?
No.
We don't know.
Come on.
We don't know. Hey, Ross, you say that, and of course that sounds silly. Louisiana Tech is scheduled for 26 games this year.
Well, can we talk about why Louisiana Tech might be scheduled for 26 games? So reason is they knew they were going to the Sun Belt.
Yes.
They did not with when you leave a conference, there's when you decide you're going to leave, and then there's when you officially notify the conference that you're leaving, and this is a very important date.
Mm, yeah. Yes.
Louisiana Tech decided to leave the conference. It was everyone was aware they were leaving, but they did not give official notice until after Conference USA had distributed all the money to its member schools. Then they gave notice. Conference USA understandably was like, wait a second. If you gave notice after we distributed the money, you're in with us for another year.
Yeah.
So essentially they got paid on the 15th and then they didn't work out their last 2 weeks. And so the company was like, I'm going to need that check back. And they were like, I'm out. Yeah. I'm going to work at the other place.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, happened in 2022 with Marshall, Old Dominion, and Southern Miss. And they all ended up playing that year.
They resolved their differences. So La Tech took the course of action to sue Conference USA, and Conference USA responded. Well, let me correct myself. La Tech sued to get a judge to grant a temporary restraining order to immediately make them eligible in the other league, the Sun Belt. And what's interesting about that is that it happened.
So somebody
in the
went
middle.
To a state judge, home court advantage, to try to get a TRO or an injunction that would get them the thing they want.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it? But not only that.
I learned it from watching you, Dad.
The way Conference USA took it was that La Tech wanted an immediate move, like that week. Well, right in the middle of their conference basketball tournament, I believe. So Conference USA's response was hilarious. It was like, hey, we think on behalf of the student athletes at La Tech, they're going to want to play in these basketball games. So you shouldn't grant a TRO and you should have a hearing instead first. And the judge did grant that. They didn't grant the TRO. They granted a hearing. So there'll be a hearing, Thursday, I believe. There you go.
We talked about crisis, right? We keep coming back to that word crisis. If you're looking for a crisis in college football or college sports, go down to this level, because there is a cascade effect. There's only one thing that runs downhill other than water, my friends, and it's splattering all over this level of college sports. Okay, so why is all this happening, right? Why is the Sun Belt annexing Louisiana Tech? Well, the Sun Belt's down a school. Why is the Sun Belt down a school? Because Texas State went to the Pac-12. Wait, that doesn't make any sense. Why would Texas State go to the Pac-12? Well, the Pac-12 was decimated, literally ripped alive in front of everybody by two giant behemoths that picked it apart, right? Wait, why would that happen? Well, again, the aforementioned Big Ten wanted to fortify into a national conference, so it pilfered two Los Angeles schools, a school in Oregon and Washington, even though they are spiritually and both like administratively centered in the Northeast and Midwest. So every single time
Godfrey, you're missing one. The big
because
big
the Southeastern
move.
Conference annexed Red River from the Big
Texas,
12 specifically
Texas
to fortify a television
to
position.
Leave.
Yes. Because the Big Two, because Texas and OU's, but more Texas than OU. I'm doing the congressional minute here, Ross. I feel like I've got asthma.
Good job. I like it.
Because Texas felt specifically that they were underrepresented in terms of revenue and didn't have enough power in an historically unstable Big 12, because this goes all the way back to fighting with Nebraska, who set off the last round of realignment in 2012 by going to the Big 10 because they were pissed off at the Longhorn Network. This is never going to end, okay?
I was trying to clap and I knocked over my...
Every time we or Ross reports or anybody opines, whatever happens in media about a major brand, a recognizable helmet, there is a trickle-down effect to this level of college sports. There is somewhat a little bit of irony, and Andy, you can stop me here, I guess, that we've
Why
seen
would I
this,
stop you? You're on a roll.
Yeah.
We've
yeah,
seen this aspiration. But like, we see this aspiration from schools like North Dakota State, from schools like Sac State, very different circumstances, to want to join this particular bottom middle tier where... And this is the part where it's less funny to me, because there are people out there who want to have as much emotional representation for their fandom of App State or Louisiana Tech or whatever as people who cheer for LSU and Michigan and all the big schools. They don't even have a schedule right now. Go look at the University of Texas at El Paso's 2026 football schedule. Do you know what it doesn't have? A single game against a school from Texas, with the exception of FCS Texas Southern, which they scheduled last minute. Does this
which
make sense?
I tried to move so we could get the Oklahoma-Michigan game into week one.
Andy, you know what else is missing? You know what else is missing from Texas El Paso's schedule? Any game against their arch rival New Mexico State, which if you're not familiar with that part of the country, is about a 25-minute drive campus to campus. It's like UNC, it's like Chapel Hill to Duke. That's gone too because of conference realignment.
Except with Hatch Chili Peppers.
The Whataburgers change when you go that far in West Texas. Did you know that? The menu changes and everything has chilies on it. We'll talk about it off air.
What?
Every single thing. Thursday.
No.
Every single aspect of group of whatever football down to the higher tier of the FCS is just kind of a, hey, there's holes appearing in the roof and we've just got to kind of like keep it from raining inside. There's no sign that this is going to stop. There's absolutely no hold on tradition, rivalry games, scheduling. They're at the mercy of these large television networks. Just this morning, I was looking through headlines. The Southern Conference is re-upped with ESPN. I really struggle with this. There's no representation. There's no consideration. And these schools are kind of they're forced to line up to ask, yes, sir, may I have some more? Please pilfer our schools. Please delay our schedules. This is not going to stop. And if you actually do have any emotional investment in any of these schools I talked about, from the MAC to the Big Sky to the Sun Belt to the Missouri Valley, this is no sign of stopping. If you're looking for a real crisis, there's a real crisis here, and it's being brought upon by television networks and mega conferences at the very top, continuing to churn towards this inevitable Super League. So, Ross, I would beg you to tell your buddies in Congress, get the lead out of your ass. Let's figure this out so we can have some sort of labor agreement, lock in a 50-team Premier League, and let's let the rest of college football maybe, I don't know, work out some sort of geographically sensible solution.
Yeah. Yep, that would make a lot of sense. I'll deliver the message today.
Thank you,
there
buddy.
You go. Ross is headed to Capitol Hill Thursday. We'll talk about what Ross learned on Capitol Hill. Also, we will talk about on the field, spring practices have begun, the big storylines affecting
football.
The biggest teams we'll mention.
We're talking about football.
Actual football.
We're talking about
on
football.
Thursday.
Let's talk to you then.